Hey, everybody. Dave Schmitto here. So excited to be live with you all today. Stick around in about 30 seconds. I'll explain what I'm doing here, and hopefully you'll join the conversation. So I'll see you in about 30 seconds. Right, everybody. Happy Monday, or whenever it is that you're watching this. As I'm sharing this, it is Marathon Monday. The Boston Marathon just wrapped up, and I'm stoked. Just got to go watch some amazing people out there doing some amazing things. And if you're watching this, remember that you're an amazing person that just accomplished something amazing as well. Might not have been running 26.2 miles, but you're changing lives. Those lives in your family, those lives in your classroom, in your school. So just appreciate all that you do. I am Dave Schmitto, the Director of Leadership and Development with the Teach Better team, and just really excited to be here today. This is yet another monthly quick tip. See, the Teach Better team was extremely lucky and blessed over the past 10, 11 months or so to partner with ESCs across the state of Ohio as a part of a grant known as Remote EdX. Let me unpack what some of that means. First of all, an ESC. For those people that are not in Ohio, an ESC is an educational service center. It's a countywide system, consortium, if you will, that provides a lot of services to local districts. Where I began my career in Michigan, we had RESAs and ISDs. Some states have countywide school systems or countywide divisions or districts. In Ohio, they have ESCs. It's a countywide system that helps support districts and schools. Well, the Teach Better team over the course of the 2022-2023 school year was able to work with 16 ESCs, which means we were able to work with a lot of schools and a lot of districts, changing the lives of a lot of staff and students, doing a lot of work from teaching people about the grid method and mastery-based instruction to strategic leadership, assessment, priority standards, you name it, we were able to help educators all over the state. And every single month, we come online like this to provide a quick snapshot of some of the work that we've been doing. We call it a monthly quick tip, and that's what I'm here to do today. Over the last 10, 11 months or so, I've had the opportunity to work with educators in Miami, Ohio, and Athens, Ohio, and Columbus, Ohio. And some of the work that I've been able to do, I think, is extremely timely to the work that a lot of educators are doing right now. Because as we know, it is the heart of assessment season. Assessment season in some of our minds and hearts tends to cause us to feel uneasy and nervous, frustrated and stressed. And I get that. But some of the work that I've been able to do with educators across Ohio is to help people create more authentic assessments, assessments that truly capture student voice, student choice, and get students engaged in the process of their learning. We've created assessments that align to what Ohio calls HQSD. First of all, what is HQSD? HQSD is another fancy way of saying high quality student data, capturing student learning, evidence of student learning in a way that we say is high quality. It's reliable. It's accurate, and it truly measures what students know. What I've been able to do with amazing educators is facilitate conversations around unique and authentic ways to capture HQSD or good data that aligns with student voice and student choice. And what I'm going to try to do today is just give you a snapshot of five or six different assessment types, techniques, and formats that educators from kindergarten through 12th grade and beyond could utilize in their schools and their classrooms. Now, when I say assessment types, I'm not saying multiple choice versus true, false, or short answer. I'm talking about ways to truly get students to own their learning, to show you evidence of what they know so that you as the educator can make strategic decisions on what comes next. So whether you are planning for final exams or midterms or unit tests or unit assessments or weekly checkups or daily assessments, whatever assessment means to you, whatever assessment you're planning for right now, I'm hoping that what I'm about to share with you can just help put things in motion. I jokingly tell people all the time, you can't steer a parked car. So hopefully this will help you navigate a little bit, start moving so that you can shift and steer and turn and take things where you need them to go. So without any further ado, let me walk you through a few fun assessment techniques and strategies that I've utilized in my classroom, in my school, and have been lucky enough to share with people all over Ohio. Let's start with one of my favorites titled playlists. Now, for full transparency, when I did this in my classroom, didn't call them playlists because playlists weren't a thing. So I grew up in a time when we had to, when we were recording music, we had to race to our bedrooms when a song came on the radio and hit play record at the same time to record music onto a tape. Well, when I was in the classroom, that was still kind of the practice, actually. We evolved slowly into burning CDs, but I want you to take that mindset and think about what it might look like today, the use of Spotify and playlists. So here's what I would do. I was a middle school teacher, and what I would do is during passing time between classes, I always had music playing. And in my classroom, the music that was playing was thematic. It had to do with something that we were going to be learning in class. It always had to do with some sort of connection, something, some sort of theme, something that I'd be covering in class that day or that week. And one of the activities that I would do is at the end of every class, I would simply ask the students to tell me what the song that was playing during passing time had to do with our instruction that day. If a student was able to answer and explain what that song had to do with our learning that day, hey, they didn't have to take any kind of follow-up quiz or subsequent assessment later on. They got the check, if you will, for showing that they were able to make that connection throughout the course of class. When I had playlists or when I had songs playing during passing time, when I never had to worry about students being tardy, kids were always rushing down the halls to get to class to hear the song because they knew that if they got there in time to hear the song, to hear the lyrics, they would be able to pass an assessment and not have to worry about something possibly more intense later on in the week. Eventually, that playlist idea would evolve. After a couple of weeks of me sharing songs with students, I would start to forecast for students. And I'd say, hey, next week, here's something that we're going to be learning about. And I'm going to give you a couple of days to go and find some music that you think would be appropriate for me to play during passing time based off of that theme or that idea. Students would then go home and they would listen to their own music. They would find songs from their own repertoire, from their own library, if you will, and they would share them with me. They would send them to me. And that would be the song. Those would be the songs that I would play during passing time or during student work time. The playlist idea would evolve and students would eventually start creating and crafting playlists. Playlists that were full of thematic songs, great lessons that students were able to show me that they could then transfer. They would be able to transfer their own worlds, their own realities, their own songs into my classroom and vice versa. The playlist idea was a great assessment strategy for me because I was able to see if students were really making authentic connections to classroom content and the things that they were learning and the things that they were doing at home. Now, what this also did is it allowed students, without even realizing it, to, as they're listening to music, as they're going through their daily life, to start seeking out content-related songs or looking for themes. They're sitting at home just trying to listen to music, just trying to chill, if you will, and now they're thinking about what's happening in Schmidto's class. Playlists are an awesome way for you to figure out what kids think are important, to get a glimpse into their own worlds, to get a glimpse into their own likes and dislikes and passions, while also assessing student mastery. So think about what you could do in your classroom the last couple of months of the school year. How might you incorporate students' playlists, if you will, into their own learning? You could do this with songs. You could do this with Netflix. You could do this with Disney Plus. You could do this with movies. You could do this with TV shows. Try to figure out ways to make connections between a kid's world and your world and figure out if you can truly see what a kid knows. Another cool assessment strategy. It's called I Think, You Think, They Think. This one serves a lot of purposes. I Think, You Think, They Think. In essence, you're going to ask students three questions. When you're asking these three questions, you're asking kids to answer through three different lenses. So you present some sort of content topic to your students, and then you ask them first, what do you think I think about this topic? I think in this lens means the student. Students, what do you think about this topic? What is your opinion? What's your thought? how do you feel about this? You're then going to ask the students to explain how they think the teacher would answer that question. So for example, let's use something that's not content related. Let's say the question is, how could we improve this school or this classroom? Student shares their opinion, and then they say, and here's what I think you would say, Mr. S or Mrs. S or Dr., whatever your name is. And they try to tell you what they think you would say. Number one, that's going to tell you a lot about what the students think about you. It's also going to allow you to figure out if the students think that you're presenting information objectively. Do they know what you think about all things, or are they still somewhat skeptical about your beliefs? Who knows? And then lastly, how do you think society would answer this question? Society as a whole, or the school as a whole, or what do you think the rest of your classmates think about this? You're asking those three questions for very strategic reasons. Number one, you want to get the student's opinion. Number two, you're trying to assess whether or not that student has a connection with you and or his or her peers or society. As I was talking about this with one of the ESEs in Southern Ohio, there was a school social worker that was present that raised her hand and said, Dave, this is a very cool strategy for me, because as a social worker, there's some profound information that I would be able to analyze through seeing some of these responses. If there was a student who always thought the world that the rest of the world saw things differently than they did, that would be extremely important information for me to know so that I could do something with it. If there was a student that always thought the rest of the class thought differently, or that the teacher always thought differently, that would be some important information that I could then act on. And I heard that and I thought, that's amazing. You know, the ultimate goal for all assessment is so that we can do something with it, not just so that we can document and label good, bad, or ugly, but so that we can take that information and do something. Well, this was a social worker that heard that and said, ooh, this is information that I can use to then take and do something with. I thought that was extremely interesting. If you're a teacher and you want to work on citing textual evidence or having students be able to support evidence or support claims with evidence and reasoning, have students pull out quotes or samples or examples or something to support their opinions of you or society. Lots of ways that you could use this information. See, think, me, we. This is a fun one as well. You give the students some sort of video, some sort of prompt, some sort of image, data, a quote, title of a book, whatever the case may be. And you ask the students to do four things. Number one, look closely at this image, this video, this picture, whatever it is, and tell me what observations can you make. Just the facts. What do you see? So in this one, for example, we can see an image that's changing. I can see two eyes. I can see a nose. I can see a mouth. What do you think about this? Number one, somebody might say, I think this one is kind of creepy. How does that picture go from a young kid to an older person? I've got lots of questions about what the artist might have done. So you're looking for students to be able to provide objective evidence and then start asking questions or their independent thoughts. Me, what connections can you make between this image and yourself? When you see this, do you see yourself aging? Do you think that you'll look similar or different? Do you do similar things with your Snapchat or your Instagram filters or on TikTok? What connections can you make between this and the real world and between yourself and this image? And then fourthly, what does this have to do with anything we're learning in class? What connections can you make between this image and what we're learning about? Students might start talking about themes, or they might start talking about big ideas. They can start talking about individual facts and things that they see that you explicitly taught. More importantly, though, students are going to have to make inferences, because you can truly come up with any image, any picture, any sample from anywhere, any quote, and see if kids can make connections. To be honest with you, I would almost challenge you to not go out there and look for things that are explicitly connected. Look, just come up with random images that you find on a Google search or that you have saved on Canva or even on your own phone, and throw them up there and ask for students to make connections between your content and that image. The more abstract, the more creative students will be. Next one, 1, 2, 3. Have you ever done classwork with the students or group work with students, and now you've sat back and you said, okay, but now how am I supposed to assess individually this group work? I had students do things collaboratively, but I don't know who was actually doing the work, because inevitably there's one student that did everything and a bunch of other people that just rode their coattails. How am I as an educator supposed to use group work as an assessment strategy? Well, the 1-2-3 protocol is a great, great way for you to do that. The 1-2-3 protocol allows you to assess individual student knowledge through group work. Here's how it works. you ask the students a prompt. Maybe you ask the students, who was the greatest president or the most important element on the periodic table? Or if I were a leader of your school and I was talking to teachers, I might say, agree or disagree, the best teachers have happy students. Ask some sort of question that doesn't necessarily have a defined right or wrong answer, a question that requires some sort of thought. And the first thing you do is you tell students individually before they start talking, you have 1 minute to write down what you think. What is your answer? And students will write it down or they'll type it or they'll have it somewhere where their thought, their idea will be eventually shared. But they get 1 minute to come up with their own answer. After that minute passes, students will have 2 minutes now to do the next phase of this. 2 minutes, they share their individual work. They share their individual thoughts with their group. And now they're only talking about each other's responses. They're asking questions to each other about why they said what they said. They're answering direct questions. They first had to think independently, and now they're asking each other questions about each other's work. After 2 minutes of that conversation goes on, you now give them 3 minutes as a group to reach consensus. As a group, you've all had the opportunity to think individually, to ask each other questions, and now you've got 3 minutes to reach consensus. This is an important skill for students to learn early on and for us to continue to reinforce: consensus building, reaching partnerships, collaboration, collegiality, all of those things, while also you as the educator are assessing and documenting their evidence that they're bringing to the conversations. Assessments work best when they are not right or wrong answers, binary, got it, don't got it. Your job as an educator is to always look at where a student is in the process of learning, knowing that there's always more that they can learn and that everybody brings something to the table. You as the educator are simply looking to say, where are they entering into this conversation so that I can build off of it? Remember, assessment is designed, the best assessments, so that you can always figure out what to do next. You're not sitting back just waiting for a finished product. You're assessing and analyzing and critiquing and evaluating, giving feedback during the assessment, not just after the assessment. 1-2-3 protocol is a great way for you as the educator to script a protocol for students so that you as the educator can take great notes to figure out what happens next. And probably my favorite protocol, the one that really has blown up over the last decade or so, brackets. A lot of you have seen these. They've gone viral, like I said, in recent years. If you've never done brackets before, oh, you're missing out. When I was a classroom teacher 20 years or so, we were doing brackets all the time, to the point where some of my students actually called me Bracket Man. So what are brackets? Well, let's think about the NCAA March Madness tournament, you know, where people say, hey, do you want to join my bracket? Where you have to figure out who's going to be the greatest college basketball team that year, who's going to win the national championship. Kind of works the same way. Brackets are something that you can use no matter the content, no matter the subject area that you're teaching in your school. A bracket forces kids to synthesize, evaluate, and do some high-level thinking. Here's how brackets work. In essence, you come up with something. A lot of people now have done book brackets, if you will, where you have the covers of a lot of books that you've read or a lot of stories or a lot of text that have been read throughout the year. And teachers or students or whoever have to vote on which book is the best. So they might have a head-to-head matchup between To Kill a Mockingbird and The Catcher in the Rye. And then they have Catch 22 against Lord of the Flies, whatever. And they've got all these little games going on until eventually you've whittled it down and you've got one champion. Well, brackets can work with anything. You could have brackets for the most important planet in the solar system. You could have brackets for the most important element on the periodic table, for the most important battle of the Civil War, for the greatest whatever, greatest president, most important part of speech, for animals, for whatever. Brackets are amazing. You can have kids truly go through and analyze who would win in fictitious matchups. Well, one part of it is simply choosing a winner. Got it. But the more important element in all this is how those winners are chosen. Getting kids to explain their rationale is so amazing because, again, assessment should always drive what comes next. If you had a bracket set up, there are a lot of ways that you could get students to engage in the bracket. Number one, when I was a teacher, one of the things that I would do is I would tell kids, if doing some sort of lecture, that I would only answer questions if students would choose a winner on a bracket. So I might be teaching. A student raises their hand and says, Schmidt, can you help me with this? Sure, but I need you to pick the winner of the 4-5 matchup here. Who's going to win? Who's the greater president, George Washington or Abe Lincoln? Cool. Now you need to explain why. What was your rationale? And you go on from there. Sometimes you'll tell students that they need to, in class that day, their homework is they need to choose the winner between the number 6 and the number 9 seed. Who's going to win that matchup and then why? You can tell different rows of kids to choose different winners and why, and to explain their rationale. Again, brackets can be used for absolutely anything, and they're so fun. But it's not just who's the winner, who's the loser of the game. The question is, and why? The why is what leads you as the administrator or the teacher or the educator to say what comes next. Brackets could be used in a leadership lens to say which rule from our student handbook is the most essential rule. Which ones do we need to focus on this year? You could do this when you're discussing your norms and procedures in your classroom at the beginning of next year. So many ways to utilize brackets to get kids to truly take their learning to the next level. Again, assessment is not just tests. It's not just quizzes. It's not just projects. In Ohio, they define it as HQSD, high quality student data. A lot of bullet points to say what is HQSD. And the 6 little samples that I just showed you all align to HQSD. When we start talking about assessment practices in schools and in classrooms, for some people, it's a scary thought. We don't like to talk about data. We don't like to talk about assessment because it seems so sterile. It seems so scientific and so quantitative. But I'm here to remind you, assessment is simply a way to measure what students know so that we can do something about it. Thank you to Remote edX and to the 16 ESCs across the state of Ohio who have allowed us to continue to support them and who will continue to pour into us and allow us to continue to learn and grow. If you are in Ohio or outside of Ohio and you're interested in this kind of work, any work on standards-based grading or the GRID method or mastery-based instruction, strategic leadership, or anything that we presented so far, just reach out. You've got my social media handle there. I'm happy to connect you to the right people, or you can go to teachbetter.com/grants if you're interested in trying to find a grant that might work with you, your school, your district, so that we can continue to partner with you and help you get a little bit better every single day.